Chapter 17. Ravitch was going to the hospital. He had been back from the Riviera for a week. Suddenly he stopped. What he saw was like something out of a child's toy box. The new building shone in the sun as if it had been constructed from a model kit. The scaffolding stood out against the bright sky like filigree, and when a beam with a figure on it began to topple, it looked as if a matchstick with a fly on it were tumbling down. It fell and seemed to fall endlessly. The figure freed itself, and now it was like a tiny doll that stretched out its arms and sailed clumsily through space. It was as if the world were frozen and still as death for a moment. Nothing stirred. No breeze, no breath, no sound. Only the little figure and the rigid beam fell and fell. Then suddenly everything was noise and movement. Ravitch realized that he had been holding his breath. He ran. The victim lay on the pavement. A second ago the street had been almost empty. Now it was swarming with people. They came from all directions, as if an alarm had sounded. Ravitch forced his way through the crowd. He noticed that two workers were attempting to lift the victim. "Don't lift him. Leave him where he is," he shouted. The people around and in front of him made way. The two workers held the victim half suspended. "Let him down slowly. Careful. Slowly." "What are you?" one of the workers asked. "A doctor?" "Yes." "All right." The workers laid the victim on the pavement. Ravitch knelt beside him and examined him. He carefully opened the sweaty blouse and felt the body. Then he rose. "What?" asked the worker who had spoken to him before. "Unconscious, isn't he?" Ravitch shook his head. "What?" the worker asked. "Dead," Ravitch said.
"Dead?"
"Yes."
"But,"
the man said incredulously, "we had just been eating lunch together."
"Is there a doctor here?"
someone asked behind the ring of gaping people.
"What's the matter?" Ravitch said. "Is there a doctor here? Quick!"
"What's the matter?"
"That woman."
"What woman?"
"The beam hit her. She's bleeding."
Ravitch forced his way out through the crowd. A short woman with a large blue apron lay on a heap of sand beside a lime trough. Her face was wrinkled, very pale, and her eyes were as motionless as lumps of coal. Blood spurted like a little fountain from below her neck. It spurted sideways in a throbbing, oblique ray and gave a strange impression of disorder. Under her head, a dark pool was quickly seeping into the sand. Ravitch pressed his fingers on the artery. He pulled out of his pocket a bandage and the small first aid kit he always kept with him. "Hold this," he said to the man next to him. Four hands grasped for the bag simultaneously. It fell to the sand and opened. He pulled out the scissors and a stick and tore open the bandage. The woman did not say anything. Not even her eyes moved. She was rigid, and every muscle of her body was tense. "Everything will be all right, Mother," Ravitch said. "Everything will be all right." The beam had struck her shoulder and neck. The shoulder was crushed, her collarbone was broken, and the joint smashed. It would remain stiff. "It is your left arm," Ravitch said, and carefully examined the neck. The skin was lacerated, but everything else was uninjured. The foot was twisted. He tapped the bone and the leg. Grey stockings, well mended but whole, tied under the knee with a black ribbon. With what detail one always saw all this. Black-laced boots, mended, the laces tied with a double knot, the shoes repaired at the toe. "Has anyone telephoned for an ambulance?" he asked. Nobody answered.
"I think the policeman has,"
someone said after a while. Ravitch raised his head.
"Policeman? Where is he?"
"Over there, with the other..."
Ravitch got up.
"Everything has been taken care of, then."
He was about to walk away. At this moment the policeman pushed through the crowd. He was a young man with a notebook in his hand. He excitedly licked his short, blunt pencil.
"One moment," he said, and started to write. "Everything has been taken care of here," Ravitch said.
"One moment, sir."
"I'm in a hurry. I have an urgent case."
"One moment, sir."
"Are you the physician?"
"I've tied off the artery, that's all. Now all that's needed is to wait for the ambulance."
"One moment, doctor. I must put down your name. You are a witness." I didn't see the accident. I happened to come by afterwards. Nevertheless, I must put down everything. This is a serious accident, Doctor.
I can see that, Ravitch said.
The policeman tried to learn the woman's name. The woman could not answer. She only stared at him without seeing him. The policeman bent over her zealously. Ravitch looked around. The crowd fenced him in like a wall. He could not get through.
Listen, he said to the policeman, I'm in a great hurry.
Very well, Doctor, don't make it more difficult. I must put everything down in order. The fact that you are a witness is important. The woman may die.
She won't die.
No one can tell about that. And then there is the question of compensation.
Did you call for an ambulance?
My colleague is attending to that. Don't bother me now, or it will take that much longer.
The woman is half dead, and you want to disappear,
one of the workmen said reproachfully to Ravitch.
She'd be dead by now if I hadn't been here.
Well then, the workman said without obvious logic, you've got to stay. The shutter of a camera clicked. A man wearing a hat turned up in front, smiled.
Will you just go through that again as if you were applying the bandage?
He asked Ravitch.
No.
It's for the press, the man said. Your picture will be in the paper with your address and a caption saying you saved the woman's life. Good publicity. Please, over here, this way. The light is better here.
Go to hell, Ravitch said. The woman urgently needs an ambulance. The bandage can't remain like that for long. See that an ambulance is called.
One thing after the other, Doctor, the policeman declared. First I must finish the report.
Has the deceased told you his name yet?
Asked a half-grown youth.
Tagirl.
The policeman spat in front of the boy's feet.
Take another picture from here, someone said to the photographer.
Why?
So that it will show that the woman was in the closed-off part of the sidewalk. See that?
He pointed at the board that was standing sidewise, with the inscription, Attention! Danger!
Take the picture so that one can see it. We need it. Compensation is out of the question here.
I'm a press photographer, the man with the hat declared, brushing the suggestion aside. I only photograph what I consider interesting.
But this is interesting. What is more interesting, with the board in the background?
A board is not interesting. Action is interesting.
Then put it down in your report.
The man tapped the policeman on the shoulder.
Who are you?
He asked angrily.
I am the representative of the construction company.
All right, the policeman said. You stay here too.
What's your name? You must know that, he asked the woman.
The woman moved her lips. Her eyelids began to flutter. Like butterflies, like deathly tired grey moths, Ravitch thought. And at the same moment, idiot that I am, I must try to get away.
Damn it, the policeman said. Maybe she's gone crazy. That makes more work. And my office hours end at 3.
Marcel, the woman said.
What?
Just a moment. What?
The policeman bent down again. The woman was silent.
What?
The policeman waited.
Once more. Say it once more.
The woman remained silent.
You with your damned chatter,
the policeman said to the representative of the construction company.
How can a man get his report together this way?
At that moment the shutter clicked.
Thank you, the photographer said, full of action. Have you got our sign in it?
The representative of the construction company asked, without waiting for the policeman.
I'll order half a dozen immediately.
No, the photographer declared. I'm a socialist. Just pay the insurance, you miserable watchdog of the millionaires. A siren shrieked. The ambulance. This is the moment, Ravitch thought. He cautiously took a step, but the policeman held him back.
You must come with us to headquarters, Doctor. I'm sorry, but we must have a record of everything.
The other policeman stood beside him now. There was nothing to be done. Let's hope it will work out all right, Ravitch thought, and went with them. The official on duty at police headquarters had listened quietly to the gendarme and policeman who had written the report. Now he turned to Ravitch.
You are not a Frenchman, he said.
He didn't ask. He stated it as a fact.
No,
Ravitch said.
What are you?
A Czech.
How is it that you are a doctor here? As a foreigner, you can't practice if you aren't naturalized.
Ravitch smiled. I don't practice here. I'm here as a tourist, for pleasure.
Have you your passport with you?
Is that necessary, Fernand? Another official asked. The gentleman has helped the woman, and we have his address. That should be enough. There are still other witnesses.
I'm interested. Have you your passport with you, or your carte d'identité?
Of course not, Ravitch said. Who keeps his passport with him all the time?
Where is it?
At the consulate. I took it there a week ago. It had to be extended. Ravitch knew that if he said his passport was at his hotel, he might be sent there with a policeman, and the bluff would be discovered at once. Besides, to be on the safe side, he had given a false address. He had a chance at the consulate.
At which consulate?
Fernand asked.
The Czech.
We can call up and ask them. Fernand looked at Ravitch.
Of course.
Fernand waited a while.
All right, he said then. We'll just ask.
He rose and went into one of the adjoining rooms. The other official was very embarrassed.
Pardon us, doctor, he said to Ravitch. Of course it isn't necessary at all. It will be cleared up immediately. We are obliged to you for your help.
Cleared up, Ravitch thought. He looked about calmly while he took out a cigarette. The gendarme stood by the door. That was mere chance. No one really suspected him as yet. He might push him aside, but there were still the man from the construction company and the two workmen. He gave it up. It would be too hard to break through. A few more policemen would be standing outside the door. Fernand returned.
There is no passport with your name at the consulate.
Oh, maybe there is, Ravitch said.
How is that possible?
An official at the telephone doesn't necessarily know everything. There are half a dozen people who deal with these matters.
Oh, this one knew.
Ravitch did not reply.
You are not a Czech, Fernand replied.
Oh, listen, Fernand, the other official began.
You haven't a Czech accent, Fernand said.
Maybe not.
You are a German, Fernand declared triumphantly, and you have no passport.
No, Ravitch replied. I am a Moroccan and have all the French passports in the world.
Sir, Fernand shouted, how dare you? You are insulting the French colonial empire.
Merde, one of the workmen said. The representative of the construction company made a face as if he wanted to salute.
Fernand, now don't. You're lying. You're not a Czech. Have you a passport or not? Answer.
The rat in man, Ravitch thought. The rat in man which one can never drown. What does it matter to this idiot whether I have a passport or not? But the rat smells something, and here it comes creeping out of its hole.
Answer!
Fernand barked at him. A piece of paper. To have it or not to have it. This creature would beg my pardon and bow if I had that scrap of paper. It would not make any difference if I had murdered a family or robbed a bank. This man would salute me. But even Christ without a passport... Nowadays he would perish in a prison. Anyhow, he would be slain long before his 33rd year.
"You'll stay here until this is cleared up," Fernand said. "I'll see to that."
"All right," Ravitch said. Fernand stamped out of the room. The second official rummaged among his papers.
"Sir," he said presently, "I am sorry. He is crazy on this subject."
"Never mind."
"Are we through?"
one of the workmen asked.
Yes.
All right. He turned to Ravitch. When the world revolution comes, you won't need a passport.
You must understand, sir, the official said. Fernand's father was killed in the World War. That's why he hates the Germans and does such things.
He looked at Ravitch for a moment in embarrassment. He seemed to surmise what was wrong.
I am awfully sorry, sir. If it was up to me...
Never mind. Ravitch looked around. May I use the telephone before this Fernand returns?
Of course. There on the table. Do it quickly.
Ravitch telephoned Morozov. He told him in German what had happened. He was to let Weber know.
Joan too?
Morozov asked. Ravitch hesitated.
No, not yet.
Tell her I have been detained, but everything will be all right again in 2 or 3 days. Take care of her.
All right,
Morozov replied, not over-enthusiastically. All right, Vozek.
When Fernand returned, Ravitch put the receiver down.
What were you talking just now? He asked with a grin. Czech?
Esperanto.
Weber came next morning.
A damned hole, he said as he looked around.
French prisons are still real prisons, Ravitch replied, not tainted with the humbug of humanitarianism. Good stinking 18th century.
Disgusting, Weber said. Disgusting that you got into it.
One shouldn't do any good deeds. One has to suffer for them immediately. I should have let the woman bleed to death. We live in an iron age, Weber.
In a cast-iron one. Did our friends find out that you are here illegally?
Naturally.
The address, too?
Of course not.
I would never expose the old Internationale.
The hotel keeper would be punished because she harbors unregistered guests, and a raid would ensue during which a dozen refugees would be caught. I gave the Hotel Lancaster as my address this time, an expensive, fine little hotel. I stayed there once during my former life.
And your new name is Vozek?
Vladimir Vozek, Ravitch grinned. My fourth.
Hell, Weber said. What can be done, Ravitch?
Not much. The main thing is that our friends mustn't find out that I've been here a few times before. Otherwise it will mean 6 months in prison.
Damn it!
Yes, the world becomes more humane day by day. Live dangerously, Nietzsche said. The refugees do, against their will.
And if they don't find out?
2 weeks, I guess, and the usual deportation.
And then?
Then I'll return.
Until you are caught again.
Exactly. It has taken a long while this time. 2 years. A lifetime.
We must do something. It can't go on like this.
It can.
What can you do?
Weber thought about it.
Durand, he then said suddenly. Naturally. Durand knows a lot of people and is influential.
He interrupted himself.
My God! You yourself performed an operation on one of the principal bigwigs, that man with the gallbladder.
Not I, Durand.
Weber laughed. Well, naturally he can't tell that to the old gentleman, but he'll be able to do something. I'll wring his heart.
You'll achieve very little. I cost him 2,000 francs some time ago. His type doesn't forget that sort of thing easily.
He will, Weber said, rather amused. The thing is, he'll be afraid you might tell about those ghosted operations. You have performed dozens for him. Besides, he needs you badly.
He can easily find someone else, Bino or some refugee surgeon. There are plenty of them.
Weber smoothed his moustache.
Not with your hand.
We'll try it anyway. I'll do it this very day. Can I get anything for you here? How is the food?
Ghastly.
But I can make them bring in something.
Cigarette?
Enough.
You can't help me with what I really need. A bath.
Ravitch lived there for 2 weeks with a Jewish plumber, a half-Jewish writer, and a Pole. The plumber was homesick for Berlin. The writer hated it. Nothing mattered to the Pole. Ravitch provided the cigarettes. The writer told Jewish jokes. The plumber was indispensable as an expert in combating the stench. After 2 weeks, Ravitch was summoned. First, he was brought before an inspector who only asked him whether he had any money.
Yes.
All right, then you can take a taxi.
An official went with him.
The street was light and sunny. It was good to be outside again. An old man was selling balloons at the entrance. Ravitch could not imagine why he was selling them in front of the prison. The official hailed a taxi.
Where are we going? Ravitch asked.
To the chief.
Ravitch did not know which chief it was. It didn't make much difference to him either, as long as it wasn't the chief of a German concentration camp. There was only one real horror in the world, to be completely and helplessly at the mercy of brutal terrorism. The present incident was harmless. The taxi had a radio. Ravitch turned it on. He got the vegetable market reports, then the political news. The official yawned. Ravitch dialed another station.
Music. A hit.
The official perked up.
Charles Trenet, he said. Ménilmontant, real class.
The taxi stopped. Ravitch paid. He was conducted into a waiting room that smelled of expectation, sweat, and dust, like all the waiting rooms in the world. He sat for half an hour and read an old issue of La Vie Parisienne, left behind by a visitor. It was like classic literature after 2 weeks without books. Then he was taken before the chief. It took some time before he recognized the short, fat man. Usually he was not concerned with faces when he operated. They were as unimportant to him as so many numbers. He was interested in the sick places only. But he had looked at this face with curiosity. There he sat, healthy, his pot belly filled again, minus gallbladder. Laval. Ravitch had forgotten by this time that Weber had intended to seek Durand's aid, and he had not expected to be presented to Laval himself. Laval looked him up and down, thereby giving himself time.
"Of course your name is not Vozek," he grumbled.
"No."
"What is your name?"
"Neumann." Ravitch had arranged this with Weber, who had explained it to Durand. Vozek was too improbable.
"You are a German, aren't you?"
"Yes."
"A refugee?"
"Yes."
"One never can tell. You don't look it."
"Not all refugees are Jews," Ravitch explained.
"Why were you lying about your name?"
Ravitch shrugged his shoulders. "What else can we do? We lie as little as possible. We have to. Do you think it's fun for us?" Laval swelled up.
"Do you think it is fun for us to be bothered with you?"
Grey, Ravitch thought. His head had been whitish-grey, the lacrimal sacs dirty blue, the mouth had gaped half open. At that time he hadn't talked. Then he had been a heap of flabby flesh with a rotting gallbladder in it.
"Where do you live?"
The address was wrong, too. "I have lived everywhere, sometimes here, sometimes there."
"For how long?"
"For 3 weeks. 3 weeks ago I came from Switzerland. I was put across the border. You know that from a legal point of view we haven't the right to live anywhere without papers, and that most of us haven't yet been able to make up our minds to commit suicide. That's the reason we bother you."
"You should have remained in Germany," Laval grumbled. "It isn't quite so bad there. People exaggerate."
"A slightly different incision," Ravitch thought, "and you wouldn't be here to talk this nonsense. The worms would have crossed your borderline without papers, or you would be a handful of dust in an undistinguished urn."
"Where did you live here?"
Laval asked.
"That's what you would like to know, to catch the others too," Ravitch thought. "In first-rate hotels," he said, "under various names, always for only a few days." "That's not true."
"Why do you ask me if you know better?" said Ravitch, who was slowly getting fed up. Laval struck the table angrily with the flat of his hand.
"Don't be impudent."
Immediately afterwards he examined his hand. "You hit the scissors," Ravitch said. Laval put his hand into his pocket. "Don't you think you're rather impertinent?" he asked suddenly, with the calm of a man who can afford to control himself because the other person is dependent on him.
"Impertinent?"
Ravitch looked at him, astonished.
"You call that impertinence? We are neither in school nor in a reformatory for repentant criminals. I'm acting in self-defense. Would you like me to feel like a criminal begging for a mild sentence, only because I'm not a Nazi and therefore have no papers? The fact that we still don't consider ourselves criminals, although we have had experience of all kinds of prison, police, humiliations, only because we want to remain alive, that's the only thing that keeps us upright, don't you understand? God knows this is something other than impertinence."
Laval did not answer.
"Have you practiced here?"
he asked.
"No."
The scar must be smaller by now, Ravitch thought. "I sewed it nicely at that time. It was quite a job with all that fat. Meanwhile, he's been stuffing himself again, stuffing and drinking."
"That's where the greatest danger is," Laval explained. "Without examinations, without control, you hang around here. Who knows for how long? Don't think that I believe you about those 3 weeks. Who knows what you had your hand in how many shady affairs?
In your paunch, with its hardened arteries, its swollen liver, and its fermenting gallbladder," Ravitch thought.
and if I hadn't had my hand in it, your friend Durand would probably have killed you in a humane and idiotic way, and would have become even more famous as a surgeon because of it, and would have raised his fees. "This is where the greatest danger lies," Laval repeated. "You are not permitted to practice, so you will accept anything that comes your way, that's obvious. I was talking about it with one of our authorities. He's of entirely the same opinion. If you really know anything about medical science, his name should be familiar to you." "No," Ravitch thought. "That's impossible. He won't say Durand now. Life can't crack such jokes." "Professor Durand," Laval said with dignity. "He explained it to me. Menials, students who have not yet completed their studies, masseurs, assistants, here all these claim to have been great medical men in Germany. Who can check on that? Illegal operations, abortions, collaboration with midwives, quackery and heaven knows what else. We can't be severe enough."
Durand, Ravitch thought. That's his revenge for the 2,000 francs.
But who'll do his operations now?
Binot, surely. Very likely they have got together again. He noticed that he was no longer listening. He did not become attentive again until Weber's name was mentioned.
"A certain Dr. Weber has spoken in your behalf. Do you know him?"
"Slightly."
"He was here."
Laval gazed straight ahead for a moment. Then he sneezed loudly, got his handkerchief out and blew his nose circumstantially, contemplated what he had blown out, folded his handkerchief together and put it into his pocket again.
"I can't do anything for you. We must be severe. You'll be deported."
"I know that."
"Have you been in France before?"
"No."
6 months' imprisonment if you return, you know that?"
"Yes."
"I'll see to it that you are deported as soon as possible. That's all I can do. Have you any money?"
"Yes."
"All right. Then you will have to pay for the trip of your escort and yourself to the border."
He nodded.
"You may go now."
"Any special hour when we have to be back?" Ravitch asked the official who was escorting him.
"Not exactly. It depends. Why?"
"I'd like to drink an aperitif." The official looked at him.
"I won't run away," Ravitch said. He drew a 20-franc bill out of his pocket and toyed with it. "All right. A few minutes can't make any difference."
They had the taxi stop at the next bistro. There were a few tables already standing outside. It was cool, but the sun was shining.
"What will you have?" Ravitch asked.
"Amer piquant. Nothing else at this hour of the day."
"Give me a fine, without water." Ravitch sat there calmly and breathed deeply. Air. What could that be? The branches of the trees on the sidewalk had brown, shining buds. There was a smell of fresh bread and new wine. The waiter brought the glasses.
"Where is the telephone?" Ravitch asked.
"Inside, to your right, next to the toilets."
"But—"
the official said. Ravitch put the 20-franc bill into his hand.
"You can probably imagine to whom I'm going to telephone. I won't disappear. You can come with me. Come along."
The official didn't hesitate for long.
"All right," he said and got up. "A human being is a human being after all."
"Joan!" "Ravitch! My God, where are you? Have they let you out? Tell me where you are."
"In a bistro."
"Stop it. Tell me where you really are."
"I'm really in a bistro."
"Where? Are you no longer in prison? Where have you been all this time? This Morozov—"
"He told you exactly what went wrong with me."
"He hasn't even told me where they took you. I would have come right away."
"That's why he didn't tell you, Joan. Better so."
"Why do you telephone from a bistro? Why don't you come here?"
"I can't come. I've only a few minutes. I had to persuade the official to stop here for a moment. Joan, I'll be sent to Switzerland in the next few days, and—" Ravitch glanced out the window. The official was leaning on the counter and talking. "And I'll be back at once." He waited.
"Joan—" "I'll come. I'll come at once. Where are you?"
"You can't come. I'm half an hour's distance from you. I've only a few minutes left."
"Hold the official off. Give him money. I can bring money with me."
"Joan," Ravitch said, "it won't work. I must stop now." He heard her breathe.
"You don't want to see me?" she then asked. It was difficult. I shouldn't have telephoned, he thought. How can one explain anything without being able to look at the other person? I'd like nothing better than to see you, Joan. Then come. That man can come with you. It's impossible. I must stop now. Tell me quickly what you're doing now. What? How do you mean that? What are you wearing? Where are you? In my room. In bed. I was up late last night. I can put something on in a minute and come right away. Late last night. Of course. All that went right on also while one was imprisoned. One forgot about it. In bed, half asleep, her hair tumbled on the pillows, stockings scattered on chairs, lingerie, an evening gown. Things began to reel. The window of the hot telephone booth, half misted by his breath, the infinitely remote head of the official that swam in it as though in an aquarium. He pulled himself together. "I must stop now, Joan." He heard her disconcerted voice. "But that's impossible. You can't simply go away like this, and I don't know anything, either where you are going or what—" Propped up, the pillows pushed aside, the telephone like a weapon and an enemy in her hand, the shoulders, the eyes deep and dark with excitement. "I'm not going to war. I'm merely travelling to Switzerland. I'll be back soon. Imagine I am a businessman who is going to sell a carload of machine guns to the League of Nations. When you come back, then it will be the same all over again. I won't be able to live from fear." "Say the last sentence once more." "It's true." Her voice became angry. "I'm the last one to be told anything. Weber can visit you, not I. You called up Marasov, not me, and now you're going—" "My God," Ravitch said, "we won't quarrel, Joan." "I'm not quarrelling. I'm merely saying what's wrong." "All right. I must stop now. Adieu, Joan." "Ravitch," she called. "Ravitch." "Yes?" "Come back again. Come back again. I'm lost without you." "I'll come back. Yes. Yes. Adieu, Joan. I'll be back soon." He stood in the hot steaming booth for a moment. Then he noticed that his hand had not let go of the receiver. He opened the door. The official looked up. He smiled good-naturedly. "Through?" "Yes." They went back outside to their table. Ravitch emptied his glass. "I shouldn't have telephoned," he thought. "I was calm before. Now I am confused. I should have known that a telephone conversation could bring nothing else, not for me or for Joan." He felt the temptation to go back, to call up again and tell her everything he really wanted to tell her, to explain to her why he couldn't see her, that he didn't want her to see him as he was, dirty, under guard. But he would come out, and it would be the same all over again. "I think we've got to move on," the official said. "Yes." Ravitch called the waiter. "Give me 2 small bottles of cognac, all the newspapers, and 12 packages of Caporal, and the check." He looked at the official. "Permissible, isn't it?" "A man is a man," the official said. The waiter brought the bottles and cigarettes. "Open the bottles," Ravitch said, while he carefully distributed the cigarettes in his pockets. He corked the bottles again in such a way that he could easily open them without a corkscrew, and put them into the inside pocket of his coat. "You're good at that," the official said. "Practice, sorry to say. As a boy, I would never have thought I might have to play Indian again in my old age." The Pole and the writer were enthusiastic about the cognac. The plumber did not drink strong liquor. He was a beer drinker, and explained in detail how much better the beer had been in Berlin. Ravitch lay on his plank and read the papers. The Pole did not read. He didn't understand French. He smoked and was happy. At night, the plumber began to cry. Ravitch was awake. He listened to the suppressed sobbing and stared at the small window behind which glimmered a pale sky. He could not sleep. Nor could he later on, when the plumber was calm. "Too well lived," he thought. "Too many things already to hurt when one didn't have them any more."